The death of God is about the drying up of a horizon of meaning and of a whole form of human life.
Where do we stand in the illusion it makes? What kind of space are we invited into?
The material relations between people become social relations between things. When we look at toasters, corn, and TVs,
to a large extent, live in the interregnum between worlds, if you will, or between paradigms. Not many people in the history of the world have faced that.
Zero Squared is the Zero Books podcast. Benjamin Lane is a math and computer science student at the University of Oregon, a member of the YDS, and my son. In this episode of the Zero Books podcast, we continue our conversation about Karl Marx, Capital, and an essay by Professor Mark Worrell entitled A Faint Rattling, a Research Note on Marx's Theory of Value. It's Thursday, April 18th. I'm Douglas Lane, the publisher of Zero Books and the host of this podcast. In this episode, you'll hear clips from an old Zero Books discussion of Capital from 2015, as well as multiple clips from a LibriVox audiobook of Capital, Volume 1. This week's podcast is available in full for our patrons. Our Patreon supporters get access to two podcasts every week, Symptomatic Redness and Zero Squared. But if you're listening on our free feed, you'll always be able to access one or the other podcast each week. At the moment, we have 589 patrons. When we reach 600 patrons, we'll introduce a new series of patron-only videos tentatively entitled Communism 101. The music you're listening to right now is a jazz piano rearrangement of the anthem for the European Union. But in just a moment, you'll be listening to my son Benjamin and I discuss Capital, Value, and Exchange.
Okay, well, last time we talked about Worrell, and I think his conception of value is that he sees value and exchange value as really being the same thing or two parts of the same thing. And he believes that value is only expressed in moments of exchange, right? And he talks a lot about abstract labor and commodity fetishism. And I think that there's a paragraph in here that I think backs up what he says, at least partially, about that.
I think I found it finally, but I'm reading a different translation. I need to catch up and read the Penguin. I need to only read the Penguin, but here's what I'm reading, my version. As a general rule, articles of utility become commodities only because they are products of the labor of private individuals or groups of individuals who carry on their work independently of each other. You think that's pretty close?
Yeah, that's close enough to the Penguin edition. Yes, that's definitely it.
Then the sum total of the labor of all these private individuals forms the aggregate labor of society. Since the producers do not come into social contact with each other until they exchange their products, the specific social character of each producer's labor does not show itself except in the act of exchange.
Right.
In other words, the labor of the individual asserts itself as a part of the labor of society only by means of the relations which the act of exchange establishes directly between the products and indirectly through them between the producers. To the latter, therefore, the relations connecting the labor of one individual with that of the rest appear not as direct social relations between individuals at work, but as what they really are, material relations between persons and social relations between things.
There's that line.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll stop there. I mean, I could read on. Let's read one more.
The next line also is relevant.
It is only by being exchanged that the products of labor acquire as values one uniform social status, distinct from their varied forms of existence as objects of utility.
Yeah.
This division of a product into a useful thing and a value becomes practically important only when exchange has acquired such an extension that useful articles are produced for the purpose of being exchanged, and their character's values has therefore to be taken into account beforehand during production. So I think that is true.
Yeah.
And so my objection is that, I mean, we have to ask ourselves, what question are we trying to answer when we ask the question whether or not we should consider value as opposed to exchange value, whether or not we need to think of it in these terms, use value, value, and exchange value, or use value, exchange value, and price.
Yeah, and also, you know, the question of whether exchange value or whether value exists beyond the moment of exchange, right?
Right. Well, look, it certainly doesn't exist beyond the moment of a society where things are produced for exchange.
Right.
That if you live in a society where you're producing things for direct use, you know, whether it's subsistence farming or something else, and that is the dominant mode of production, this kind of value is not, at least certainly not dominant, right? So you do need to be producing for exchange in order for the value that Marx talks about to arise historically. Okay, but within capitalism, however, you can that production already takes future exchange into account. And having done so, the value does obtain to the commodities before they enter the market.
And Marx does say in here that when things are produced, I think it was in here, and I don't think I'm confusing this with the Zizek piece, but I think he says when things are produced, they're produced with the knowledge of their exchange in mind.
Right. Right. Now you don't know what price you're going to get.
Yeah. So
when you, but you kind of have a good idea.
No. Yeah. Right.
But you know, there is a moment of realization, mm-hmm. but even before that moment of realization, I mean, look, I just did my taxes.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I purchased capital, right? I purchased productive equipment.
Yeah.
Which I was then able to itemize it and get it as a deduction from my how much taxes I owed. Mm-hmm. So the expenses I accrued as my own capitalist were deducted from what I owed the state government. But if I had produced DVDs rather than just releasing things directly to YouTube and had a pile of them,
yeah,
I couldn't have that would have been considered. Those would have been considered assets for sale. And the only way I could have taken a deduction from them is based on their depreciation in value.
Right.
Or if I lost them, if they were destroyed.
I mean, the thing is, you can always rephrase this stuff by talking about what you can do with them when you exchange them. Right. Like you can say when you talk about
before, but all of this is before exchanges.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
so I'm saying that the products that I would produce, let's say DVDs, would have value.
Right. Well, when you say that they depreciate in value, what you mean is when you bring them to market, you can't exchange them at the same rate that you could have before. Right. That's what it means. So, I mean, you can always rephrase this and say depreciating value. It doesn't mean that they literally sit around being value. It means that when you bring them to market, the way they're realized as value will have changed.
The labor power that I employed, say, or the commodities that I purchased had a value of their own and a price of their own when they were. But even in a perfectly functioning system where we really were exchanging equivalents. Right. Rather than.
No, that would still be the case.
It would be the case that I could very well suffer a loss, which would mean that, you know, the value that I had created was shifted around. I mean, that's the significant thing here is like I would have still have produced that value. Well, whether or not it would be counted as value, though, I don't know. Like if you purchased it at a lower price.
Like, I mean, okay. Something has to be something has to be something that you trade in the market for its value to matter in terms of the economy, right? Like, this is kind of the argument against the mud pie.
Marx claimed that labor is what gives all commodities value. But what if I make a mud pie? This is the product of labor, yet nobody will buy it. It has no value. So ha, take that, Karl Marx. The problem with this argument is that Marx was very clear that labor has to be useful labor to create value. Yet he didn't think that it was this usefulness that creates value. Labor has been doing useful things for millennia. All societies are made up of useful labor. Marx calls this useful labor that makes up a society social labor. The organization of this social labor differs from society to society. In a capitalist society, this social labor is organized through commodity exchange. The products of labor are assigned market values, and the fluctuations of these values coordinate the social labor process. This is a way of organizing social labor unique to capitalism, and it has all sorts of unique properties that other forms of social labor don't have. The usefulness of labor is not what is specific to capitalism. Value is. Hence, usefulness is not what Marx is interested in talking about. Value is. In video 4, we will look at why usefulness can't explain the amount of value a commodity has. For now, we will look at this more fundamental question. What does it mean for useful labor to take the form of commodity exchanges?
I'm thinking about this. You may be right here, Ben. I hate that. But, let me just think about this for a second. So if I were to produce widgets and it cost me, let's say $100 to produce those widgets, and I produced $100 worth of widgets. That's what I was hoping to realize in exchange. But I just held on to them for a year.
Yeah.
And by the time that I brought them to market, the price of widgets had gone down.
Like sure.
I would have lost.
You wouldn't have produced them at the value. Socially necessary labor time at the moment you were trading.
But the people who bought them would not be getting additional more value than they were paying for.
No. Because it's abstract.
That would not be a problem of prices. That could be a problem of the actual value, right? So the value changes over time.
Seeing if you think about value as appearing in the exchange moment, you don't have to get rid of its tie to labor, right? I mean, Marx says it as much when in the same paragraph when they bring their commodities to meet each other in the market, they appear as, you know, that's when they see their labor for what it is, right? With its specific social characteristics. In that exchange moment. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, it's the abstraction that's happening. And it is an abstraction of real labor. But it's not like it's not like the laboring itself before the exchange. Like implanted something onto the commodity exactly. It's like once you meet an exchange, you abstract your labor that you did. Is what I think I'm seeing here.
Well, read that bit again where you're getting that from.
Objects of utility become commodities only because they are the products of the labor of private individuals who work independently of each other. The sum total of the labor of all those private individuals forms the aggregate labor of society. Since the producers do not come into social contact until they exchange the products of their labor, the specific social characteristics of their private labors appears only within the exchange. So in that exchange, the social characteristics of your labor becomes clear. So I don't think you can, if you take the world's kind of perspective, that means that, you have to disconnect it from labor. In fact, I mean, if that was the case, then we should be very critical, right?
Right. Well, that's why I was being as critical as I
am. Yeah.
The labor of individuals asserts itself as a part of the labor of society only by means of the relations which the act of exchange establishes directly between the products and indirectly through them between the producers.